Thanks so much for joining us today on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. You know, 2020 was a chaotic year for politics, for life, for work, even the weather. And our weather guys are back. John Martin, professor and former chair of the Department of Atmospheric and Oceanic Sciences at UW-Madison. John, good to have you back.
Glad to be here, Larry.
Steve Ackerman with us as well. Steve's vice chancellor for research and grad education at UW-Madison, also a professor in that Department of Atmospheric and Oceanic Sciences. And Steve, welcome back to you.
It's great to be back at the start of 2021.
Right. Well, we're going to talk about the most memorable weather events of 2020 and maybe some observations about Inauguration Day weather over the years. We'll also talk about what we've seen in winter snowfall and temperatures so far, and maybe learn about some of the different weather features you might be seeing outside, like something called rime frost. And, of course, take your weather questions as well. Join in 800-642-1234, or you can email us at ideas@wpr.org. You know, it's been a while since we had the two of you on. It was November, actually, and I hope you had a nice holiday season. But let's start off by remembering some of the big weather events of 2020. And I think we saw quite a lot, didn't we? John, Steve, go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, I think the things that come to my mind immediately are the hurricane season. It was a phenomenal hurricane season in terms of numbers. It just seemed like they just kept coming and wouldn't stop. And then the other thing that hits me is the derecho that we had in that moved across Iowa and into the upper Midwest in general.
Yeah, those were two biggies. I think there were more than 1,000 tornadoes in the U.S., weren't there, John?
That sounds about right. Yeah, it was a pretty decent season, although nothing close to a record season. But it was a pretty good season for tornadoes. But as Steve says, the thing that stands out in my mind is the tropical cyclone season in the Atlantic was unbelievable.
You know, somebody else mentioned water spouts too over the Great Lakes.
Yeah, there was that one day in I think it was in November maybe or early fall, where there was over 230 water spouts on Lake Michigan, which is a phenomenal situation. Yeah, late September, early October is when it was. Crazy time. And also in August. And, you know, water spouts aren't as dangerous as tornadoes, but man, do they look nasty.
They provide a perfect opportunity for chickens like me to go and see something that I can say looks like a tornado.
Right, exactly.
You know, I know I'm probably not going to get hurt or anything like that, but I can watch it. So that's perfect for me.
Yeah.
I imagine we could have used some water spouts out west, because we had wildfires. I think there was over 8 million acres burned.
Yeah, that's right. 2020 was also a big season for wildfires out in the West.
So there was a lot going on in 2020 when it came to the weather, as along with everything else that we had to put up with. I got another timely thing you wrote about on your blog, which I thought was kind of fun, the Inauguration Day weather. It's quite a chilly time of the year to be having a big outdoor event. What was the weather like throughout the years for Inauguration Day? I think there was one president who got sick because it was cold and died shortly after he was inaugurated.
William Henry Harrison, 1841. It wasn't the cold. It turns out the temperature was in the mid 40s. It was a day of transition, though. It was cloudy and the wind was coming from the northwest, which probably means it was probably a raw day, but not very cold. And then that time was March 4th was the Inauguration Day. That's the only calendar day that doubles as a sentence. And so he gave a speech that was like 71 minutes long, which was just out of control. And he ended up getting, I think it was diphtheria that he died of or something like that. It was a fever of some kind. So it was pretty bad news. And then Tyler took over for him and had an ignominious reign himself. So it didn't work out.
But what about the weather? I mean, did we really have some bad ones over the inauguration years?
Yeah, there's been some really bad ones. President Kennedy was inaugurated the day after a surprise snowstorm in Washington dropped about 8 inches of snow. And, you know, the famous his famous inaugural address, you can see him and the Chief Justice breathing smoke. It was so cold. The temperature was in the low 20s, which for Washington, D.C. is really exceptionally cold. President Reagan had an interesting pair of inaugurals. His first one was the warmest ever, and his second one was the second coldest ever. So he was maybe the coldest ever, actually. I can't remember now if I'm right. Yeah, I think it was below zero on Reagan's second inaugural. They moved it inside. So all manner of things have happened on that. Lincoln was inaugurated on the 4th of March, 1865, in a rainy, damp day in Washington, D.C. War was almost over. John Wilkes Booth was on an adjoining platform on the Capitol within sight of Lincoln. Cooked up a miserable plan on that miserable day. So,
you were breaking up a little bit there, but we got the gist of it. Let's talk about snowfall for a minute. It kind of seems like we haven't had much for snowstorms so far, at least in the southern part of the state. I mean, how are we compared to past years in averages?
Yeah, the whole state is pretty much below normal by about 10 inches or more. In fact, a lot of the upper Midwest, I think, is below normal by about 10 inches or so.
Yeah, that wouldn't surprise me. I don't know for sure about Madison, but I wouldn't be surprised if we're quite a bit below normal. We should, by the end of January, we should probably have already had about 30 or 25 to 30 inches of snow, and we've certainly not had that, even with the occasional bluster that comes out of the observing site here in town. We haven't gotten close to that, so yeah, bad year.
Yeah, I think I only broke out the snow plow just twice this year so far.
Yeah, this last one was nice and fluffy and easy to push around.
Well, that's an interesting aspect of the snow this year, isn't it, Larry, that we've only had a couple of our traditional fluffy snows. Quite a number of them have been slushy, almost, you know, southern New England-like, concrete and almost concrete in their texture. It's been a really weird winter. And nothing at all like the Farmer's Almanac suggested.
I haven't checked the Farmer's Almanac.
You can bet I have.
Well, what about the temperatures? Well, as long as we're at it, mostly mild temperatures we've been having. Is there something to that?
Have we had a single day, morning or otherwise, below zero this year? And I don't think we have. And so we're on the 25th of January, two or three days away from what's pretty much climatologically the coldest day of the year, not the record coldest. That's the 30th. But we haven't seen anything like it. And the hemisphere itself is running at the 13th warmest of the last 73 years for this winter up through the 22nd of January. So it's been an unusual winter.
Yeah. So what's the coldest? John, you seem to know that. What's the coldest we've had ever?
Minus 37 on January 30th, 1951 in Madison.
Oh.
Yeah, that's brutal. It's unimaginably cold. And that's, I want to remind you, that is the still air temperature. That's not this nonsensical, you know, wind chill that people will sometimes say, like Steve's article today in the newspaper. He had it right. The temperature was cold at the ice bowl, but the wind chill is what made it so miserable on top of that. And people often say, yeah, the ice bowl, it was minus 30. No, it wasn't. Steve had it right. It was like minus 6, but it was minus 30-something wind chill.
At that temperature, I mean, could you spit and it freezes before it hits the ground at minus 30 or thereabouts?
I don't know. The coldest I've ever been is minus 24, and I'm grossly disappointed about that. I'd like to test some of these things out, so I can't say from experience.
You know, when it does get that cold, though, I know this happened last year, I think, or maybe two winters ago, when it got really cold, and people would go out with pots of boiling water and throw it up into the air and watch it all freeze and quickly evaporate. So.
Yeah, that's right.
Oh, man. Talking with our weather guys today, Steve Ackerman and John Martin. And you can join in, too. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234, or you can email us at ideas@wpr.org. Love to have you join in. We are going to take a look at the news. We'll find out what else is in store for us here on the Ideas Network, and then we'll be back with our guests. So you stay with us. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to the Ideas Network on Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks for joining us today on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. Our weather guys are back, Steve Ackerman and John Martin. Always great to have them come by. And they always come by at the last Monday of the month. And so here they are to answer your weather and climate questions. You can join in at 800-642-1234 or email us at ideas@wpr.org. Sierra in Madison has a question for you guys, so let's go there. Sierra, hi. Thank you for calling.
Oh, yes, hi. Well, I have never heard of anything called a derecho in the Midwest, and I'm over 70 years old. So I was wondering if, you know, and this is so destructive, especially for our farmers. So I was wondering if this is a new climate change weather phenomenon, and if we can develop better preparations for it. Thanks a lot.
All right. Thank you very much. Steve, do you want to take a crack at that?
It's not a new phenomena. It has been around for a while. I actually don't remember when it got the name derecho. Derecho in Spanish, as I remember, means straight, or it's related to straight. And so it was a wind to really separate from tornadoes, which are spinning and rotating. And a derecho is more like a straight line wind, very destructive, as this one was that we had this past summer when it went through Iowa and really destroyed some of the corn crop in Iowa in particular. I don't know, John, do you remember when the name came about?
Yeah, it was an argument among Weather Service personnel in the 1870s, or then the Weather Bureau, and it was in Iowa, Senator in Iowa. I forget the guy's name, but he was insistent that there was a difference between, as you point out, the rotary motions, circular motions of tornadic storms that you could see traced in the ground after they went by, and the straight line wind damage that comes from other types of severe weather in the high plains. At the time, anyway, he thought it was just the high plains in the Midwest. 1870s was about the time I was thinking was when this distinction was first well understood. But then the Weather Service, as we've talked about a number of times, buried the whole notion of tornadoes and probably derechos as well. Couldn't use those words for a long time because they were too fear inducing. So the idea was buried for a while, but it's got a long pedigree, and it's almost certainly not likely to be any more enhanced in a changed climate than tornadoes, although we're still trying to work on whether or not that's the case, whether there'll be more tornadoes and therefore more derechos in a warmer, more moist climate. More moist is probably the thing that gets me most nervous.
Yeah. Okay. Tammy, thank you again for that question, Sierra. Tammy in Mason, Wisconsin, your turn. Hi, Tammy. Tammy, are you there? Oh, maybe we lost her. Well, let's go to Joe in Sauk County. Hi, Joe.
Hi, fellas. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
A while ago, you were mentioning no sub-zero temperatures yet this winter. Actually, my phone on Saturday morning was -3 when I first got up around 4:30. Now, which leads me to my real question is, is my iPhone's accurate on temperatures and cell phone apps for weather in general?
Yeah, so I would say two things. One is when we said we haven't had any below zeros, we were referring to Madison. So I don't know if other areas, particularly in northern Wisconsin, might have gotten below zero. But with regard to the iPhone, I think it's probably a function of where it's pulling that data from. So if the app is going to a National Weather Service office and pulling it from there, then it's pretty accurate. But if it's pulling it, you know, from a bank, then I would really, which I doubt, but maybe it's doing that, I would really doubt its accuracy.
Yeah. Same here.
There you go, Joe. Thank you so much. Randy in Hayward, your turn. Hi, Randy.
Hello. Thanks for taking my call.
You bet.
Just a couple comments first about the winter. In Hayward, northwest corner of the state, we're usually on a growing zone. We're usually a 2 or a 3, so we're obviously the coldest spot in the state, and I think that this year, if we've had 3 nights below zero, that would be it. And also then this morning, I think I heard that Lake Superior had the least amount of ice on ever. But my question is, have you ever heard of the Great Lakes having an influence on especially the northern third of the state during those months of November, December, January, when we can get streaks, almost a week at a time, if not longer, of constant clouds? And I just wonder, with low pressure systems in the area, if the Great Lakes have an influence on that. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah, thanks for calling, Randy. Appreciate it. Well, John, do you want to take a crack?
Yeah, if I understand the question right, and I'm sorry if I don't, Randy, the Great Lakes have a profound influence on the progression and average depth of low pressure systems that make their way across the region. In fact, a former, a colleague of ours who used to be at the University of Michigan worked on what he called the aggregate lake effect. And he tricked his model, or he played games with his numerical forecast model and either took the Great Lakes completely out of the model, made them just pasture land, or then brought them back in as the lakes with the exact same geography that they currently have, and then ran storms from the historical record over the Great Lakes region and watched how they changed. And they were substantially more intense because the Great Lakes are there than they would be otherwise. Individual cloud streaks that you talk about in long period cloudiness in the vicinity of the lakes will depend a lot on wind direction. And I think with a northerly flow, generally Hayward's going to be kind of socked in over long periods of the cold season. But with less ice on Lake Superior, it probably means that your lake effect snow season is going to be extended as well. I don't know how you're doing so far on lake effect, but probably the lack of cold has also diminished your annual snowfall this year, would be my guess, but I don't know if that's right.
Yeah, and I did a study a couple of years ago where I took 30 years of satellite data, cloud cover from satellite data, and composited it by season and by wind direction.
Cool.
Yeah. And it was just two things came out of that. One is, cloud cover definitely downwind of a lake went up in comparison to other areas that weren't directly downwind of a lake. And the other thing that came out of that is wintertime in Michigan, it's cloudy all the time. It's surrounded by Great Lakes. Doesn't matter where the wind's coming from.
That's
downwind.
That's a good point. Yeah, that's right.
So it's always cloudy.
Oh man. So there you go, Randy.
The Midwest, come to Wisconsin. Don't go to Michigan.
Yeah. That's a good point.
Oh, thank you, Randy. Appreciate it. Tammy and Mason, your turn. Hi, Tammy.
Hello.
Hi, what can we do for you?
Okay. I finally moved to Mason this past winter. My last winters, over where I lived between Butternut, it's like east-west of Butternut. I lived way out in the country. It was like 45 below zero. But then all the springs, I always had gray clouds. You go about a mile from my house, it's sunny. And then you get to my house, it's raining like you won't believe. And then, I mean, hail. And then I get double rainbows. constantly. But you no more leave just a half a mile from my house. And everyone says I'm on a double.
Oh,
you know, weather belt.
Oh, all right. Thank you for the comment. Steve, a comment?
If I remember geography a little right, Mason's up by Lake Superior. And so you may be seeing those effects when the wind direction is coming from the right way. Otherwise, I think, you know, we tend to remember the weather we don't want. That might be part of it, that, you know, you're thinking the weather's really, really bad because you just moved there and you want it to be something else.
Yeah.
and just to kind of go along with the Michigan comments from a bit earlier, Joe from Ironwood, Michigan called and said they had 54 inches of snow so far, but they should have had 115 inches by this time.
Yeah, wow. They're way below then. They're less than 50%. Yeah, pretty amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah, and Tammy, that's tough luck because Steve's right. It's very, very sensitive to wind direction. Whether you get cloudiness or rain, you might have just had some bad luck. On the other hand, I'd go visit that home inspector and I'd kind of give him a little bit of my my mind on that. You know, it's like the old doctor. You go to the doctor and I broke my leg in two places. Don't go to those places.
Oh, man. Thanks, Tammy, for calling. Oh, man. Lauren in Blair, Wisconsin. Your turn. Hi, Lauren.
I have a farm ditch, 1,382 feet, that goes through a somewhat of a wetland, marshland that I got permits for to clean. And I've had that since May of 2017, and I'm waiting for an excavator, a 30-ton excavator that will be supported by frozen ground. And for that, I'm probably going to need some 20-below weather for 2 weeks. What are my odds? And then also, we're not far from the Sullivan Doppler radar, and I'd like you to speak a little bit about what usefulness they have for us and all the things that we do. Thanks a lot for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, on the second question first, the Doppler radar gives you really high resolution depiction of where it's precipitating and in some cases where it's precipitating from the cloud but not reaching the ground. And that information can be communicated to people. Let's say that somebody's trying to dry hay or something, you know, in the middle of the summer. They want to know that distinction. Those decisions really cost people resources if they make the wrong one. So the degree of precision and high resolution nature of those new radars are well worth it for a lot of reasons. We could go on for a long time on that. But the likelihood you're going to get several days with overnight lows, let's say below minus 20 in this winter, are starting to look dim, in my opinion. I think we're about a week shy of this is the coldest climatological week of the year, the 25th of January to about the 1st of February. And it will be chilly, I would say, this week, but it's not going to be anything close to record cold. We're not going to get close to zero. And then after that, boy, the sun climbs the sky, the nights are shorter, and it starts to get really difficult for cold air of that sort of vintage to make its way this far south. So I think the chances are very minimal this year that you're going to get enough frozen ground to do the excavation you want to do.
Yeah, and while we haven't had a lot of snow, we've had some on the ground, and that'll help insulate and keep the surface even warmer. So
another factor.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, let's see. I wanted to go back to an email that someone had sent, and I'm just not seeing right off just instantly here, but we got an email with some photos, and the listeners, it shows ropes of snow or ice.
Yeah.
And they were not growing on any twig or other surface. And the photo is really fantastic. It looks like a rope of snow.
Mm.
Steve?
Yeah, you know, I looked at that. It's a fascinating picture. And the first thing that came to my mind, is that it looked like a snake just relaxing in a branch and hanging down, which really validated the cross-country myth that when you're cross-country skiing and you just fall down, that it's a snow snake. They're real. They're not imaginary. That's why. My guess in terms of how they formed is, if you look closely at it, if you get to see the photos, there's hoarfrost around it.
Yeah, right.
It's going to help it keep solid. So I wondered if it was initially a gentle snowfall that just covered branches, and then the snow stopped and hoarfrost began to develop and a wind developed and kind of pushed it off the branch. But with the hoarfrost, you know, giving it like a shield of ice around it, it was enough to keep it solid, so that it's hanging down. And it looks like, you know, as it fell off or was gently pushed off the branch, you know, it's not taking up the whole branch anymore, you know, so that would account for the dipping of it. Mm. Those were my thoughts on it anyway.
Well, talking hoarfrost here and so forth, early on in January, we had a lot of foggy mornings and some frost-covered trees. It was pretty, and if you're on Facebook, I don't know how many hundred photos I saw that, and I took a few of my own, frankly, they're really pretty. And so explain what we were actually seeing there.
Yeah, there were two things I think we were seeing during that time period. One is what we call rime. And so in those cases where there was a fog in the morning, the fog is liquid water drops. But when they would hit a tree branch or something, they would immediately freeze. And then you would get these really nice crystalline structures that are just absolutely beautiful because they cover the entire tree branches. And then the other thing is a hoarfrost, which gives you similar looking things, nice little ice crystals, or actually sometimes they get really big. But the difference there is it's the water vapor in the atmosphere in the gas phase is forming right into the crystalline structure. And so it's what we call deposition as opposed to liquid water freezing on the droplets.
So that's the difference. You wrote about ice crystals in your blog. So that, how are these different from other types of frost and so forth?
It's really just the difference in how they form. Hoarfrost is the vapor phase directly forming on the ice, and rime ice is liquid water drops that's usually associated with fogs freezing when they come into contact with the branch or the object.
Chris in Eau Claire has something I think relates to this. Chris, hi. Thanks for calling.
Yes, hello. I had a question on needle snow. I've been living in Wisconsin for over 20 years now, and I think this winter was the first time I had seen that. I was just wondering, is that not normal for this area, more common in other areas?
Okay, and Chris is in Eau Claire.
Yeah, I would say certainly more common in Antarctica, where you really get, again, it gets really cold enough so that you have water vapor really beginning to condense and form these ice crystal structures in the form of needles. It's also called diamond dust because if there's any kind of light, a lot of times they would form at night. And the moon would be out, and you could see it sparkling, like in the sense of diamond.
Are those the ones that really bite your face when you're out in it?
Yeah, they hurt. They do.
Yeah.
Yeah. Bullets. There's even bullets. There's a type of snow crystal called a bullet that is almost like a needle, but it actually looks more like a bullet, and it hurts like crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thanks again, Chris. Dave in North Freedom, your turn. Hi, Dave.
Hi. I was wondering, do derechos form under the same basis as a tornado? Or what induces them? What circumstances cause them?
There's elements of the environment that might be the same. Broadly speaking, you're not going to get... They both emerge in environments that support severe thunderstorms, really deep convective thunderstorms where the depth of the cloud can go up to 60, 65,000 feet. And what happens in a that the depths of air, the characteristic of some of these thunderstorms, are so undiluted that they drag air down from very high elevation and maintain its wind speed. Nothing will stop the horizontal wind speed of that air until it hits an object and slows down. And so if the downdraft can drag that really high momentum horizontally moving air to the surface, you get a straight line wind. In the tornadic environment, there are extra ingredients. One of them is known as helicity, and that is not only the spin of the air horizontally, but also how it's sort of a corkscrew way of thinking about how the air can be spinning. And environments that are rich in helicity have a better chance usually of forming tornadoes than environments that don't have it. And so it can be measured, but it's measured really mostly after the fact, not beforehand. So it isn't always easy to tell which kind of environment you're going to get from in one spot on a given day.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Thank you, Dave. Appreciate your call. Somebody is wondering, do you think we're going to have some big winter snowstorms still in store?
Well, according to the Farmer's Almanac.
Yeah. According to the Farmer's Almanac, there'll be one. Yeah. You know, December and January are our snowiest months of the year, climatologically. And then followed by March. But March snow is sort of like a visit from your in-laws. You know, it lingers longer than you want, but it doesn't really cause you any trouble. But, you know, February is probably the driest of the winter months. And so I don't hold out great hope for big events in February. They've happened before. But I start to lose my enthusiasm about this time of year if nothing's happened. And then I look forward to March and hope for the best. But I usually jump right over February because it doesn't usually bring us big snows, unfortunately. A couple of years ago, we had the biggest snow of the whole season was on Super Bowl Sunday, and a sore spot today for all of us. But nonetheless, that's about it. The first week of February, and after that, it's really hard to really pin your hopes on heavy snows. Here, anyway. Up north, different.
Yeah. On that note, we are out of time, guys. It went quick. We'll look forward to your next visit next month, the last Monday of the month. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
John Martin and Steve Ackerman. Steve, Vice Chancellor for Research and Grad Education at UW-Madison. But they're all both of them are professors also in the Department of Atmospheric and Oceanic Sciences at UW-Madison. They'll be back on February 22nd. In the meantime, thank you so much for listening. Stay with us. Lots in store on the Ideas Network. I'm Larry Mehler.